And just in case you're looking for the book, Cousy on the Celtic Mystique, it's out by McGraw-Hill. Bob, let's take some calls for you, and we kick it off in New Jersey tonight, Ocean Township, New Jersey. And Harry, that's you.
Yes, hi. Hi, Ron. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
As a Celtic fan, I want to thank you for keeping the franchise competitive before Bill Russell's arrival.
Well, that's a matter of perspective, I guess, an opinion. I think it's fair to say that. The team was competitive, but I don't think we got by the first round of the playoffs for 3 years.
Right.
So it was a struggle.
Bob, I'd like to point something out that since 57, the Canadians have won 15 Stanley Cups, so they do belong on the same pedestal as the Celtics.
Okay.
All right?
I stand corrected.
I'm a fan of both teams, so I keep track of these things.
Uh-huh.
Bob, I'd like to ask you two quick questions, if I may. Have you ever been offered the Celtics head coaching job?
Yeah, we deal with that in the book.
Okay.
It was offered twice, and for reasons that are better explained if you get a copy of the book,
because
we don't have time to explain it. I was not able to accept, but Arnold and I discussed it on two occasions.
Last question. I'm sure you knew the late Eddie Anderson, the Holy Cross football coach.
Yes,
what
did.
Kind of person was he?
I didn't know him socially or in a close way. As a matter of fact, it was, he kind of had sort of a father figure image, I think, to those of us who were younger than he was. He was a very well-disciplined, well-structured man who we all felt was an outstanding football coach, but more importantly, a man of great integrity. And, that kind of touches all the bases today, and you say, well, aren't all coaches that way? I wish they were, but that's the way we looked upon him.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Harry. Sacramento, California, and Craig.
Hello, Bob. I'd like to ask a couple general basketball questions.
Yes, Craig.
First of all, how do you feel that your great Celtics teams would fare, if it's possible, against today's best basketball teams?
Yeah, that's the eternal question that's always asked in sports, Craig. I think as a general statement, I'd simply say that in the last 25 years, in my judgment, the athlete has gotten bigger, better, stronger. What they do, with far more agility and mobility. I mean, I watched Michael Jordan soar, and I watched Dr. J before him, and I watched the All-Star game in basketball, and I say, God, that's not the game we played. So, if you accept that premise, then you must assume that today's great champions, are certainly the equal and probably would do far better, if we were able to match them up. However, with that said, I think individually, the great players of yesteryear in basketball, in other words, Bill Russell, would function very effectively today. He might not dominate the way he did. I'd like to think Bob Cousy would be very productive today, but I wouldn't have the same overall impact, perhaps, that we did, 25 years ago. But so the great players could play today. A lot of people say, you wouldn't be able to physically compete. I don't think that's true, but I do think the athlete is better, and therefore the teams are better today.
Okay, that brings up my next question. What is your all-NBA, all-time team position by position, including players that are playing today?
Yeah, it's tough to narrow it down to five people, Craig, because there's been too many good ones, slight people. I still feel, frankly, that Russell at the center position, and obviously I'm biased, but the guy was the most productive center in the history of the NBA. So I would put Russell at that position. I'm willing to concede that Kareem, if there were a machine that measured talent, Kareem, I think, probably combined what Russell and Chamberlain specialized in. But all I know is when the whistle blew, Russell became a mean SOB, and that helped him complement his talent, even though it was less than Kareem, more effectively, and produce 11 championships from him. So I'd take Russell. I think you've got to talk about Elgin Baylor's and Bob Pettit's as forwards. They have to be mentioned, in this category. And then you go to Dr. J and Larry Bird. Also, as premier forwards. Guards in my day, I still think Oscar and Jerry West could play with any of them.
Okay, let's go to Palmyra, New York. Mike, you're on with Bob Cousy.
Oh, good evening. gentlemen. It's a real thrill to talk to you, Mr. Cousy.
Thank you.
I wanted to first, I had a couple questions for you. First of all, I wanted to ask you if you realized when you started throwing those behind-the-neck passes that you were becoming a legend in really changing the face of the game. There's very few people who can really say that they changed the face of basketball. And you put something into basketball that more or less just made it a big difference. And I wanted to know if you thought that you were changing the game at that point and you realized the impact that you were putting on the game.
Yeah, I'm not being unduly humble, but, you know, it's just pure God-given talent. I mean, I was ahead of my time in that sense.
Right.
What I was doing 25 years ago, you can see every 8 or 12-year-old in the schoolyard doing today. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's all caught up, and they're doing it with more flair and obviously perhaps even more spectacularly, but because I was the only one who seemed to have that kind of talent or, I don't know, imagination in those days, you know, I was identified with it. And I actually, 90% of my game was pretty conservative, and so I didn't really use this as much as people thought. And it used to get the attention of high school coaches more than anything. I'd get letters in those days because these were coaches who wouldn't let their kids take anything but two-hand shots, you know, or pass in front of them with two hands and things of this nature, extremely conservative, and they'd write me and say, for God's sake, stop already with that. You know, do you know the impact, the negative impact you're having on all these kids? Because the kids obviously like to imitate the spectacular rather than the bread and butter stuff. So it had its negative overtones as well. But, I was the only one doing it in those days.
Well, thank God for you and Pete Maravich because you really changed the game. Well, I also wanted to ask you about the racial thing with the Celtics. In 56, when Russell joined the team, you were more or less embraced by the city. And, you know, you were a white All-American hero from Holy Cross.
Right.
And you had all the flair. I mean, Russell had the defensive skills, but you had the flair with behind-the-neck passes and such. Do you think that, in a way, it was fair that maybe Bill Russell didn't always get all the credit? Because in Red Auerbach's book, and I quote him, he says that once you had the flu and you didn't play, and I don't know if you remember this, but he said that they had been on a road trip and you won every game they played out of their mind. And when they got back, the sign at the airport said, will Cousy play tonight? Do you think that was fair to Bill Russell?
Yeah.
And was there some type of racial thing with the team then?
Yeah, no, there was. You've got to be, you know, referring to the media's response rather than the team. I think, and we go through this pretty comprehensively in the book as well, you know, Russ's militancy and was it justified and how he feels to this day about Boston and the impact within the unit. There were no, in 13 years that I was with the team, there was never the slightest hint of racial discord within the team unit. And that's, I think, probably, again, to some degree, because of Red Auerbach, he threw it out in the open. In other words, everything, as I say, within our so-called family was discussed. It wasn't, you know, plus that, I think, sports is a great common denominator, too, in terms of team sports. Now, I think it's a little different in individual sports, but in team sports, and especially in basketball, where the success of the individual is directly related to the success of the whole. So, you know, it's the old foxhole theory. If you're in that foxhole and your tail is on the line with some guy, you know, you don't care whether he's polka-dotted. It's, I mean, all your prejudices and all the bigots go run and hide when that happens because they're going to pull with the guy who's in there who can save their butt. So, and in basketball, when everyone's relying on one another, I think, just from a self-interest standpoint, this also has impact on relationships. But in team sports, in football and basketball, I think this is especially true because everyone is dependent on the other guy, and you literally, you know, become oblivious to color. I wish we could say that that's the way it is all over the world, but unfortunately, that's not the case. But now, in terms of the media and how they responded to the situation, you know, I wasn't aware of it while it was going on, but again, in retrospect, people have told me what you've just told me and so forth, and I don't know. When you're kind of sitting on top of the pack, unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't make you sensitive enough, you know, to the feelings of others and how they might respond, you know, to a situation that you've just described like this. And so I'm saying, yeah, you know, I don't recall the incident, but it's very possible that a lot of things occurred that were not fair in that sense, that someone didn't get their just due. Tommy Heinsohn has said he was the perennial rookie, and he literally won the first championship for us, scored 37 points as a rookie, and really never got due credit for that. So, you know, it's unfortunately, bigotry is with us to a large degree still in this country, and it's reflected constantly on every level, and until we learn to live with one another more harmoniously, you know, you're going to have situations like this. So I don't, you know, I'm saying it's very possible it wasn't fair, but there was absolutely no racial disharmony within the Celtic unit in the 13 years that I was there.
Thank you, Mike, for the call. And I might just back up what you're saying, Bob, with some information of my own, because I was in Seattle doing the Sonics when Russ was also the coach up there. And we had long talks, and I'll tell you what, when he came into Boston, he loved to beat the Celtics. And we talked a little bit about that situation, and one of the things I remember him telling me is he said that the team was so close. He said if somebody needed something for their apartment, either a stereo unit or something, he said there was another member of the team that knew somebody that could help him get it or something. And he said the only thing he resented, he said, was, or at least in talking to me, was he said that in the postseason, he said all the white players got jobs, but none of the black players were offered jobs.
Yeah, you know, someone told me that Russ had something about that in his book that he did relative to, I guess, you know, I was getting endorsements and he was not. Of course, he's more than made up for that. Russ has done extremely well because he has been, you know, the premier representative of the Celtics and the NBA, but I guess it was a fact of life. I'll tell you what, not many NBA players, you know, there weren't many goodies being handed out in those days, Ron, you know. I mean, there weren't many endorsement opportunities. They're just, I mean, maybe there were summer jobs available, but I'll tell you, you know, it was nothing any of us ever were able to retire on. Otherwise, you and I wouldn't be talking here. I still wouldn't be grinding it out. You know?
Yeah, one of the things he said, too, was he said that they would ask him to do, I think it was like commercials or something for a product, and he would say, well, how much are you going to pay? Mm-hmm. And they would say scale, and he said, wait a minute, scale is what you pay somebody off the street. Scale is not what you pay me.
I can relate to all that, and those things were happening, and there weren't many, if any, black athletes being used.
Bob, thank you very much for your time tonight. It's an excellent book. It's called Cousy on the Celtic Mystique. We barely even scratched the surface, and hopefully if you get out here on the West Coast with the Celtics, we can coax you in again and talk a little bit more about this fine book. Thank you very much for your time tonight, sir.
Look forward to it.
Take
thank
care.
You.
Bob Cousy, and the book is out by McGraw-Hill. I'm Ron Barr. Stick around. We're coming right back.